This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining me here. I dropped a little battery here, not for my pacemaker, but anyway, just another day in paradise. And there's some relevance to that, to the what I'll be talking about today. And what I'd like to do is ask you just for a moment to imagine growing up, having all the desires that any other human being has, and you want to be an anthropologist or a doctor, and you do that, and you're the daughter of immigrants and what have you, and you're stricken with the illness, and it's debilitating, and you get your degree and all, and society, you're not wanting anything for free. And imagine you develop, let's say, something like schizophrenia. And when you have that, you have the misfortune of getting older and breaking your hip, and you're then sent by taxi from the hospital to a park. Well, you've already been residing in the park because you're homeless and things fell on you in a bad way. And then imagine your husband having diabetes, and you can't move, and he's confined to a wheelchair. And imagine you have a son who has problems and coping problems and homeless. You may be getting the picture. We're going to be talking about homelessness, but not in the general sense. There are some things out there, they're stinging what is happening to people that are homeless. And I don't mean to just solely advocate for homeless people, but to just share with you this situation that we're going to be talking about is that recently a lady, the information that was provided to us by her family and her husband is that she was in the hospital. She broke a hip, was transported to the hospital, got treatment. And when the hospital, apparently the claim is that the hospital put her in a taxi and sent her back to the park where she cannot walk and can only scoot on the ground, if you can imagine, can't stand up. And saying all of that, and you're sleeping in the park there now in Kailua, and I know some of you probably already predisposed of your opinions, but hopefully you can have a little light in your heart to just listen, if nothing else. If you've already blocked out and don't like homeless people and think they're the scum of the earth and that they made their own decisions and they're drugs and they did these things, I'm going to ask you just leave just a little glimmer of hope, a little light. I'm sure all of you have it. And then listen to the story without being predisposed on your early opinions about other stories. And so, and imagine you being confined to a wheelchair and you're the husband and you can't reach and hug your wife or your loved one. You can't do anything. And you're confined there and you see this predicament. And then your wife is sitting there that you've had a wife for 20-some years and fathered children with her and had a happy life. And now she's sitting there eating and competing with the pigeons for her food. So, and you would love to reach out and hug her, but you can't do that because you yourself is restricted or confined to a wheelchair. These are the hardships of things we don't look at when we talk about the, quote, homeless. So I'm going to ask you to just listen in, and if you have any comments or as we go on, 524-1080, and please feel free to call. But I have Mr. Dave Canella on the phone who's joining me, and he is a gentleman that is confined to a wheelchair. He didn't ask for something for nothing, and I think you'll find his comments and his story enlightening and encouraging. And hopefully you will give some support, or when you see a homeless person again, you will think differently than we have been told or it's suggested how we should think of them. So, Dave, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, and thank you so much for reaching out and getting our story. It needs to be exposed because the help is just totally inadequate. Mm-hmm. When I was in the hospital with a social worker, the only thing they gave me is a piece of paper with the youth hostel, this youth hostel in Waikiki. Mm-hmm. That's $25 a day. That's mm-hmm. $700 a month. Mm-hmm. Well, that's practically her whole paycheck, her whole disability check.
This is for your wife. They suggested, the social worker suggested you go to the youth hostel for your wife.
Right.
Who could not walk. Cannot walk.
Right, right. And for one thing, how is she going to be transported there? How is she going to get transported to the doctor? Mm-hmm. How is she going to be taken care of? Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, if you would, go back to the original. What hospital was she housed in, and when did this occur, and did she have the surgery, and what happened? Can you tell
this
story?
This is a Castle Hospital. They're in Kailua. But it's about 18 days ago now. I can't remember the exact day, but mm-hmm. She spent about 4 days just getting stable enough to get the surgery. The surgery was done to her. And then she was recuperating in the hospital. But she was in no condition to be out of that hospital. And they said, okay, here's your discharge papers. You must go. And I said, wait a minute. Your social worker said you need to make sure she gets a place to stay to recover. And when they handed me the little paper that told me to call these numbers for the youth hostel. And also the YMCA, so you could get a room in there, which is about the same price too per day. Actually, I think it's even more. They put her in a taxi and with a walker and dumped her in the park. Well, they dumped her by the place that she would like to be around because there's some, by the restroom, there's a lot of nasty people around there. So she's scared, so she scoots across the grass about 200 feet to this corner that she felt a little more secure on. And then I'm at the hospital. By the time I get out, the taxi had already taken her away. So all I could do is get on the bus with my wheelchair, and that's not a fast process. So I was there maybe about 45 minutes later, and then I see her scooting across the grass. I took some photos of that. This is outrageous to me. And so, I know right away it was about to rain that day. And so I thought, well, the first thing I do is I gotta rig up a tarp. Well, you can imagine being in a wheelchair and rigging up a tarp. So I went along to get some rope and some a tarp and everything. And I'm putting it up. I was trying to get some help from a colleague, a friend or two, but they, you know, they people are always busy.
Not available. Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, so I'm struggling just to put up a tarp, and then I need to put together some cold water. Bottle of water and some food, mm-hmm. and then a good friend of mine, she was able to get some blankets and some clothes and other things of that, and another walker that was a little better that has little right. seats on it, mm-hmm. and so we got her set up, and here's my dilemma too. This is an electric wheelchair, so I have to. I have to keep it charged. Well, I'm down here in the Kakaako homeless shelter, and so I can charge it regularly. But I had to stay there with her for a couple of nights. And my son is a really good guy, but he has what they call Asperger's. It's mild autism. And he's very limited to what he can do. Mm-hmm. And so, he's in the park too. He lives in the park. And he, basically, he gets food out of the trash to eat.
Yeah,
you know?
He shared that with me, that he routinely, that is, he's foraged in the trash cans for food daily. To sustain himself, and if you heard this young man talk, folks, I too, a long time ago, didn't understand the plight of homelessness, and then I began to think, look at yourself, what you've endured, and the stigma that's placed on you, and then I'm beginning to understand there's a lot to this, and the dehumanizing aspect of when we talk to Dave here. It's kind of broken up, but Dave lives in the shelter, homeless shelter, the one-stop, first next-step shelter. Now, here's the problem. Dave's confined to a wheelchair, but he felt a need to go to see his wife in the park. Well, now his battery is dead, dying. Not only that, he's on a cell phone, but he's also having to get on a bus to go back because there are rules at the shelter that says if you miss more than two nights, they can evict you. So imagine these are the things we never hear about, that the people in these predicaments have to endure. So not only are you seeing a human being in this situation, in these situations, as we see the homeless, but there's a bigger story behind it. But go ahead, Dave, your wife is Evelyn, by the way, and she has a degree in anthropology, and you shared with me she was once Miss Filipina, 1971 or 72.
Yeah, this is before I knew her, but she was, she got a degree at University of Hawaii in Manoa back in the early 70s. She was in anthropology, and she was... up and coming, ready to face the world with her degree, and was ready to go. And then the symptoms of schizophrenia started on. And this is, of course, she didn't realize that, and she was trying her best because she was applying for jobs, and she was, she had ideas of going, this is cultural anthropology, and she was going to go out and conquer the world. And she did her darndest. She decided, well, I'll go back to Boston, because Boston, there's good opportunities. There's a lot, quite an intellectual community there and everything. And this is when the symptoms of her schizophrenia, came out. I guess she was about 22. That's usually the way it works, about your early 20s, is when these symptoms of schizophrenia come out. And life turned upside down. She was able to get temporary jobs, but they wouldn't last very long. When you get schizophrenia, you will be doing very inappropriate things. You'll be... all of a sudden, you'll be hearing voices, and then you will be you'll be talking out loud to the voices, or you'll be mad at the voices. Mm-hmm. And so, if you can imagine, she would get office jobs. Well, she's right in the middle of a job, and all of a sudden she's shouting at her voices. Well, guess what? That you lose your job, and it became a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. And then she finally came back to Hawaii and went with family, and the family took her in, some cousins of hers for a while. But, you know, but they saw that she was, you know, she wasn't...
And they weren't skilled to work with or deal with
her. Yeah, and unfortunately, most people have, you know, don't... don't understand mental illness. And most people are very scared of it. They think when people are talking to themselves and they're swearing and they think it's directed at them, and it really scares them, and they get mad at it, and they get embarrassed at it.
Mm-hmm.
So she was pretty much tossed.
So now, for yourself, you were a professional as well, all right? You worked, you said, with a paper company fashioning. What did you do? And you were born here, correct?
Oh, well, okay, here's the one. No, my family came here in 1970. My dad got a job at Pearl Harbor. He was a mechanical engineer down there. I became quite immersed. No, I was born and raised when I was a child in
Seattle,
Washington.
Yeah, Seattle,
but,
I'm sorry.
But, however, my, my family came here, and I was still, let's see, I guess 16 years old, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Waipawa High School, and I graduated in 72, and it was, life looked good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was time to leave the nest, and I went to, I first started out going to community college, and then I went to Leeward, and then I went to Honolulu Community College, and then I found a job, a pretty decent job. That worked for this paper company. We made disposable paper blankets for the movie industry, and we sold movie materials,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. And it was a good. Decent pay, a hard day's work for a hard day's pay, a good pay, a decent pay, and the benefits were good, and it was steady work,
mm-hmm.
and I continued to work there, and I stayed there for 26 years. I was a supervisor for about 20 of those years,
mm-hmm.
and I managed a crew that ran our machinery and everything, and ran the little company, and we had different managers. You know how things are nowadays. You have different owners of companies and different management and all that kind of stuff. But I had been there for a long time, and of course, like everybody, I fell in love.
Mm-hmm. You fell in love, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we got married. Had two beautiful children. They're wonderful children. I got a lot of help from my mother, their grandmother, to raise them, and that was awesome because she really went all out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know what? But their mom was still there for them too because they. They would be there when the kids got home from school, too. And I remember because I drive a lot of kids from their school that were latchkey children, you know. And I said, "Oh, isn't that so nice? I don't even know. My children are able to go come home to their parents, you know."
Right, so, your children are able to come home to your parents, but. These kids
or even to my wife,
right?
And my,
but these were latchkey kids, and you were offering help. Now, what is the situation with your wife now? She is just going to sit there and in the park. There has there been any outreach on part of any other social organization or
okay.
health care? I am watching her Friday evening. She was there and having to wash her hair out of a bottle and what have you. I don't, I'm not speaking out of sympathy. I'm speaking out, I guess, more of a sense of frustration in that our government, the people, and I know some of you out there going, well, this is not a socialist system. You're right. But we are still human beings, and but then if you're political, then you're not a human being anyway. But in these situations, there's a human being at the center of all of these issues, whether you agree with what they did or what they didn't do or how they did it or made bad choices. It does not matter. The reality is there is a human being, a lady, a mother, a wife, a daughter, that sits in the park and isolated as if she has committed some horrendous crime. And that can't even feel the touch of her husband's hand because he can't get up on the sidewalk. Even if you wanted to, it would be difficult to get up on the little platform that she's sitting on, right? How does that feel?
It feels devastating, really. You know, okay, here's what the deal was. Okay, I was told to call the Suicide and Crisis Center.
Mm-hmm.
So I called the Suicide and Crisis Center. And I explain the situation, and they say, well, she has to get on the phone and talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just come out there because the person involved has to get on the phone. Even though I explained to her that she has schizophrenia, she's afraid of phones. That's one of the symptoms of schizophrenia. They're afraid of technology. I mean, they think there's some kind of evil spirits or whatever. You know, that's what it is. What is this like? So I tried to say, listen, she's afraid of the phone. Can't you guys just come here and assess things? And no, we can't do that. Okay, well, my next option is to call the ambulance again. Mm-hmm. I called the ambulance, and they came out there, and they talked to her and asked how she was, and she says, I'm okay. You know, because she's absolutely afraid of authority figures, any kind. And so I said, you ambulance people, what's the problem? You can see she really needs to be hospitalized again. And he says, unless she gives us her permission, unless it's an immediate life-threatening deal, they can't do that.
They won't pick her up.
That's the rules.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the funny thing, when I left you the other day, I was thinking about a couple of days before there was an animal, a small dog was hit by a car. And my God, you should have seen the outpouring of love. And I love animals, and I'd probably react the same way they do. But I was thinking to myself, here is a dog that there was people coming out of the restaurant and people running across the street to give aid and never asking a question, never asking, well, was this dog, was this a disobedient dog or anything? They just, I mean, the love that was pouring out of them. And then I think back and I see Evelyn Canella sitting there in the park, can't go to the restroom, fecating on herself. And in turn, people walk by with their Starbucks coffee. And I think you still have a right to walk by and do whatever you want to do. But it's a very strange world that we're living in, and they walk by and they have their soccer shoes on and their fancy bikes, and I'm just looking at this and thinking the dog gets more care and response than a human being. I don't know maybe what it is, but and that's just me now speaking out. Some of you maybe think that I'm off my rockers or be speaking in such terms, but it is just it's a stark contrast of what is really going on. And I'm not here to talk about homelessness in total. It's that how are we able to walk by and rush out in the middle of traffic to give aid to a dog, but for a human being, a woman. We walk by, and there are some now that do give. Let's see if there's a caller here. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes, hi. My name is Paul Pusey.
Okay. How are you?
And I'm at the Car Cock Next Step Shelter.
The Kakaako, okay.
Yes, and it's hard to understand how people can get thrown out into the street when they're trying so hard just for simple made-up rules like chores.
Mm-hmm.
They have a chore list. And I see people that have disabilities, actually like five of them come to mind, get thrown out because they forget to unplug a plug.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole devised paper chore list is really nothing more than a way to discriminate against people that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame. There was a lady, Tony, that comes to mind. You know, she was elderly. Mm-hmm. And the police, instead of finding this woman a nice place or some kind of help, the police drag her away and throw her off the property. You know, she wound up raped by some big buck, she wound up raped in the park.
Mm-hmm.
There was Wade. Wade is disabled, and he was thrown out because of the chore, had to sleep outside. He almost wound up, he did wind up sick. My Misty had a walker. She was thrown out.
Mm-hmm. Let me hold on 1 minute, Paul. Some listeners are probably thinking this is disjointed, but this is a Next Step Shelter at Kakaako. Now, Dave, you are also a resident of that facility, correct?
Oh yeah.
And so I guess the relationship here is that, as I mentioned earlier, I guess the call is speaking about the climate there. Dave, for example, if you had to stay a third night with your wife in the park, you would have been possibly evicted from
For 30 days.
Yeah.
I would be put on the street for 30 days. I couldn't come back.
Okay.
And
what's happening? I'm sorry. What's happening? Paul, I want to make that connection. If you would, go ahead. And Dave, I'll give you a chance to talk in a second.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't more clear on that. Yeah, that was the connection. I work. I have a job. I've been working for almost a year and staying at the shelter, and I'm constantly under threat of being thrown out into the street. It's almost, in its own way, like a terror tactic that they use on us people. So I work every day, and at any minute, I can make one mistake, like unplug a plug, wind up in the park, lose my job. You know, I was thrown out one time before because I was a minute late, and it was raining. That's why I was late, and mm-hmm. I had to sleep outside under a building. But it's not the park is a horrible place. You can get hurt out there. And,
mm-hmm.
I've known so many people that have been there, including myself. That I think they should do a little bit more for the homeless and maybe
mm-hmm.
treat them with a lot more integrity, because they're good working people.
Mm-hmm. And being homeless, you didn't give up your card in the human race.
No, I certainly didn't. And I also deserve the right to sleep,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, if you're not in a facility, you can't sleep because you're constantly harassed, hosed with water, police waking you up 2-3 times a night telling you to move. And then even when you're on legal spots, sometimes you still get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a right to be able to sleep, but you don't get to sleep
mm-hmm.
if you're homeless.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what we'll do, if you could take this number down, 782-6627. I'd like to speak with you later, Paul, on this.
Okay.
And for the listeners out there, just in the last, I've gotten a number of complaints, people asking for assistance that live in that facility. But in the last 2 weeks, I've been inundated with complaints. And so I've been checking this facility and looking, doing some paperwork and looking back. And I got to tell you, one of the most disturbing things to me about this facility, this Next Step, and I intend to really look at it and share with you what I find. But one of the most glaring examples of we can judge what the state cares about and the government and the city cares about and the federal government cares about homeless people. Will Aspera is a state senator. Will Aspera somehow, his son, who has a degree in political science, is one of the administrators there at the next step. And a great many of these complaints that I've been receiving names this gentleman, Jason Aspera, who ran for office as city council in Ever Beach a while back. How on earth did he get a job managing the Next Step program when there are people that have mental issues, they have people who have medical issues, and he is a judge, jury, and adjudicator, as I did speak with him the other day. Go ahead.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There's no discrimination. There's no process of appeal. All you do is he walks up and determines whether or not you're gonna stay or you're not gonna stay, and there's absolutely no say in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dave, you go ahead and hold on, Paul, there, if you have a – Dave? Dave, are you there?
Yeah.
Your medication. Don't worry. It's okay. Go ahead.
I affirm everything he says. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense to put people – this is a homeless shelter, a place mm-hmm. to get people – in some kind of protection from the streets,
mm-hmm.
and to put them back on the streets just does not make any sense. And a whole lot of people are they're in crisis. They have depression. They're like me in wheelchairs. They had this fellow here for, maybe 2 months or so, that had cerebral palsy. He couldn't even talk. And you could tell, he would come up to me and want to have a conversation, and I would try and listen to him, but his speech was so muddled. But I could tell his total frustration, I could tell he was just totally mad at the way they were telling him what to do and where to go. And everything, and I've seen case after case after case, like you heard about folks with walkers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is a halt where we are is about about 4 blocks from the main boulevard Ala Moana. There, we have to walk out there, and most people have to go get on a bus to get anywhere. Here's the deal, you know, homeless means poor. It means, for whatever reason, and there's many multiple reasons, you're poor. And you don't have the resources to do that. And I've seen some unbelievable resourceful people in here just trying to scratch by. And here's another thing that just irritates me fully. They're all for getting these, what they call this program fees,
mm-hmm.
which is really rent. They call it program fees.
Mm-hmm.
It's $60 a month, but they will harass people to get that fee from them. And if they finally don't pay it, they get evicted from here.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, these are people that are desperately looking for work,
mm-hmm.
if they can. And here's what I've heard them say. Go, you can go and get cans and bottles and out of the trash, and you can make a few dollars every day, and then you can pay the rent. And this Waikiki Health Center, even on their letterhead, it says, this is a, I forget exactly what it says, but this is a place where if you can't afford it, the services will be provided for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens here.
Right. Now, hold on here. You mentioned the Waikiki Health Center. They are the one that is managing this next step, correct?
Right.
Okay.
They got the contract, I think, in November it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is they get funding, public funding, and also funding donations. And I'm hoping that, and I believe in my heart of hearts that there is something wrong, totally wrong. I'll give you an example. The listeners, last week while I'm doing some checking, I go to the next step. And there's the police there and the fire department there with an ambulance, or the ambulance. And there's this young lady. I'll call her Tyrant, the Tyrant. She came out, put her hands in front of my camera, and proceeded to tell me that, no, you can't film this. You can't take pictures of the outside. You can't do anything like that because it's a confidentiality of these people. You're violating their rights. And shoo me away, and in fact told the police to arrest me. Well, that's okay. I can take that part of it. But what is painful about this, and I'm a firm believer now, I'm sold that you people are getting some very serious retaliations and harassments and sure. unfair treatment. And here's how I draw that conclusion, based on other things, but also...
Thank you so much,
The other thing is, while I couldn't stand there and take a picture of the outside of the building, if you were to go to Jason Espero's campaign page website for his campaign for city council, you will see Jason Espero standing inside the shelter with a picture. This is he used this in his campaign. And in turn, I can't take a picture on the outside because it would violate the confidentiality of the citizens or the people that are residing there. You understand. You see the double. And also, there's another picture of him sitting out there. But I want to share something with the listeners out there and yourselves. On September 13, 2010... Kanu, Hawaii. This is an interview Kanu, Hawaii did, and while looking through, they were interviewing Jason Espero's father, Willie Espero, and they basically, what actions have you taken to help address the needs of the poor or homeless in your community? Now, listen to this now. This is what, I know we're talking about Jason, but you'll see the relationship. Well, he states that I have worked on legislation and I have spoken with homeless individuals about their plight. This is Senator Willis Sparrow when asked, what has he done? Well, he's worked on legislation. Didn't say he passed legislation. He only worked on it. But then he goes on, and I have spoken with homeless individuals about their plight. Okay? But then he goes on and says, but my son, Jason, works with the homeless through the Waikiki Health Center. Well, first of all, if you're being interviewed and you're asked, what do you do for the people, the homeless? You should ask and answer, this is what I've done. We don't care what your son have done. Your son have done it because you somehow, and I believe, that he only got that job. And there were Suzanne Oakland nominated him for a role in the homeless committee. There's a committee, and the governor went ahead and appointed him. Nepotism is bad when we are just in an office where we're signing driver's license. That's bad there. But when you have the welfare of human beings in your hand and you put an unskilled, inexperienced individual because he's a relative of a senator's son, I don't care, I might be dead wrong, but it still stinks. And the complaints that are out there and that are coming from that facility warrants and merits a complete investigation, and soon. So, guys, go ahead if you have any other comments you want to add.
Well, no, that was well put. You don't put, you know, people's lives in someone's hands that just, you know, that doesn't even care.
Yeah, he can't care. He didn't have the ability to care. There are people with schizophrenia, as we've talked about. How does he judge that? I spoke with him, by the way, and I asked him about Dave's situation. Dave's wife is in this predicament, and Dave is in this predicament, and the bus system has changed around. If Dave shows up a third day, Well, does that constitute a violation? He said, well, we'd have to look at it and see. Well, who does it make the decision? He makes the decision. And you're already in trouble there with him, are you, Dave?
Yeah.
And what kind of issues have you had, just briefly, in that situation?
Well, for one thing, he will not even listen. I gave him much evidence of all my predicaments, but he is just totally, he says, we have these rules, and we have these rules, and we have these rules, mm-hmm. and this is the way it works.
Right.
And he never takes in all the hardships. And, you know, a whole lot of these people here are under incredible hardships, and they're just trying to, in their daily lives, just trying to mm-hmm. stay alive, mm-hmm. just trying to survive. And there's no leniency. Here's what it feels like. I remember when I was a little kid, I used to end up in the principal's office, and the principal's there ready for the paddling. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get a fear, a terror in me, because here's this guy that's gonna dictate my life without even listening to my predicament.
So you're saying the system is insensitive?
Excuse me?
He's being insensitive, showing insensitivity.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's disgusting. And you know what? I would understand if it was just me, but I've heard this story after story after story mm-hmm. in here about people that have gotten very unjustly treated, and it's terrible. Here's the way we're getting punished for being poor and homeless. You feel it. You feel it in your you feel it. You're really bad. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I see. It's like we're these little kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're all adults,
right.
grown-up adults
right.
that have had hard luck for whatever reason. Right.
Well, but you must. I think you guys are displaying, and this is a little humor, too much politics in your decisions over there. That's why they hired Jason. He, being a political science guy, he wanted to make sure that not too many people on the right gets admitted there, I guess. But because he doesn't have any skills at the judging and handling people with mental issues or problems. And being a diabetic, I wouldn't even begin to know what you experience until I watched you the other day, and I'm thinking, you can't even get out of your wheelchair without some major assistance, or you might fall. And you need a guy there that, or someone, to be sensitive to all of this. But anyway, go ahead, Paul.
You know, I forgot about something that was like really, really important. My son is here, and he is still in the street. He went every day for a month and a half with me. We called. We did everything to get into this program together, and he wasn't accepted. Now, I would ask myself why. He didn't have a record, doesn't have no problems, nothing, and he never got accepted into the shelter, and he's still into the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he went every single day. I walked in there, I brought him there to the health center. Now, he wasn't accepted. There's a lot of people that aren't accepted, and it's purely because of some reason, and Jason is the one that makes the decision. And my son is still in the street mm-hmm. and still subject to all these things and could want them.
Dear.
Yeah, and he's still in the street. He was never accepted. And the only, I don't even want to go there, but he's just, why are some people accepted and some aren't, just on face value alone? I'm gonna have to do something to get my son out of this place. He's at IHS. They finally took him. So he did just get a place at IHS.
but I don't understand how they can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're going to have to shut down here, but if you want to call back, guys, in the next hour, you can do so. But what I'd like to just say in closing, some of you listening probably say these are just people wanting something for nothing. Well, we are past that because it's clear that the government has acknowledged that there is a need, and that's why they come up with millions of dollars to fund these programs, and that's why they get people to operate these projects. So we're beyond questioning people if they want something for nothing or these are losers.
Can I say one thing? How could I want something for nothing if I'm a vet with an honorable discharge, a perfect record, mm-hmm. and I work a job and I pay taxes?
Right.
How can I want something for nothing?
But that seemed to be the mindset. So to get past all of that, the facility is there. There should be rules, and there should be things done to humanize, not dehumanize people, to respect the human being and allow them to use that as the, quote, next step to success, to getting themselves back and together again. But anyway, guys, Paul, thank you. And Dave, if you want to call back in the next hour, I'm going to talk briefly about it. But
sure.
Okay? And thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Oh, thank
Aloha.
You.
Aloha. All right.
Aloha.
And here's one of the problems with all of this. All of the people that I've spoken to, here's what's really nightmarishly frightening. Everyone, and you, if you hear the stories, and I know you, everybody can tell a lie, but I can tell you I'm smart enough to know a lie between someone begging for help. They're all fearful of retaliation, all of them. So if you go in and sign on the dotted line saying that you're homeless and you get accepted, do you divest yourself of your civil rights, of your right to free speech, of your right to express yourself and convey to others how you're being treated unfairly? But anyway, I'll be back in the next hour, and we're going to talk about hovercrafts and other things and take up a little bit on that. 524-1080 is the number if you'd like to call. Aloha.
Anybody tell me where I can find any love?
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
Well, there's Reese. Say, what are you doing in here, man?
Well, I just stopped in this evening to get myself a little taste. The music is nice and swinging, and of course, I really dig the place. Of course, I haven't had much sleep lately, and I feel sort of down and out.
Yeah, but look over there in the corner, man.
Oh, yeah, there's something to shout about. Hey, hey, pretty baby. Girl, don't you go nowhere.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, pretty baby, yeah. Girl, don't you go nowhere. Cause as soon as I pay the bartender, girl, I'll be right there. She looked up and blushed and smiled, and my heart skipped a beat. She stacked from her head down to her feet. Hey, barkeep, you better come in and get your bread. This little girl's getting ready to split, and I'm about to go out of my head. Hey, hey, you pretty baby. Girl, don't you go out that door.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, pretty baby. Girl, don't you go out that door. I'm afraid if I lose sight on you, I just might not see you no more. She slowed up just a little bit and turned her head and smiled. She was 34, 24, 38 and dressed in the lady style. I finally caught up with the pretty little thing before she got out on the streets. And she told me she was waiting on her old man, who was a policeman on the beat. Hey, hey, pretty baby. Girl, I'll see you another time.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, pretty baby. Girl, I'll see you another time. Because if you're a policeman's woman, just talking to you is a crime.
That's right, bud. Let's go.
Oh, no.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, and thank you for joining me. Taking up a little bit on the other subject that we talked about earlier, homelessness and I just want to reiterate the impact that we have, that we don't see or notice. It's painful when a person like me think this is a free country, and we have the right to speak and we have rights, and when we fall down, that does not mean falling down. We were stripped of our rights. We're still human beings, even in the lowest moments. And what I go away with, I've talked to 18 people. I was looking at my notes here, and here's what they all say at the end. I'm afraid to speak publicly because I don't have anything left. And if I lose this, I'm just out on my own. I'm out there in the rain, in the wind. And that's bad. So, again, caller, thank you for calling, and you have a comment or question?
Sure. Mr. Cox, thanks for taking my call. I was listening to the first hour of your program, and it was very heart-rendering and It really hurt me to listen to those people talk about the conditions that they're in. The husband and wife were separated. She's living in the park, and he's at the next step. And they're both physically and mentally unable to really reach out and help each other, give each other comfort, and nobody else seems to want to. And then the veteran who is at the next step, and he's working, but he doesn't make enough to provide shelter and food for himself. And these people are not asking for anything. They're not asking for something for nothing. They're asking just for empathy and some type of help, or people, some agency, or people that professionally should be concerned with this should come by and check on these people, or either check on the next step. I'm not making allegations against the next step, but it certainly seems to me that they're doing something wrong. Now, the next step in the Waikiki Health Center, I'm pretty sure they probably start off as entities that were there that are there to help people, but somewhere along the line they become politicized by the same political players, like this sparrow, the Satan the Sparrow, and this his father. I'm wondering how did this guy, the Satan the Sparrow, who has no discipline, a professional or academic discipline in what he's administrating, is doing at this type of facility. I also question the fact that he has arbitrary subjective control over what happens to the people there. I don't understand how they don't have some type of counsel or some type of forum within that facility to adjudicate a person's or discipline a person that's been perceived or has actually he or she has actually done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's been what I've heard anecdotally, and again, these are just allegations, where people have stayed there, and there's isn't any really real separation between families, children, women, and the male population. I don't know if it's changed, but a couple of years ago, I talked to a person who stayed there. I don't want to give his name out over the air, but he's saying that they had a toilet or shower facilities that were communal. In other words, they didn't separate the women and children from the men,
mm-hmm.
or the male population, or the general population. I'm sorry, not a gender thing, from the general population. So the given is this: it's like you alluded to. How can you have this Jason Sparrow, who is really not qualified? I'm pretty sure these are nonprofits. Who's there? Was he put there by his father, or was he greased into there? Because you see the same thing happening in the political landscape. You look at all these political figures, Mufi Hanneman, his brother, or maybe some of his family. They get these jobs. He certainly gets a job, a golden parachute when he leaves political office. He works for the the hotel industry, the private industry. Same people who probably help fund his campaigns and stuff. It's like musical chairs. It's the same people that do the same, political people that do the same things over and over again, you know. And it's just, I'm so happy that there are people like you who investigate these things and bring it to the forefront so people like myself can be educated and we can more clearly understand what's going on around us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of just letting things pass by us, and maybe, with your help, things will change in the city and in the state. So again, thank you so much, and I really appreciate the way you allowed both of those individuals to express themselves. They didn't have everything chronologically in order, but that tells me that they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they're telling what happened to them in the best way they could, without lying or twisting. Or bending the truth. They told you the truth. I really believe that. And thank you so much for what you do.
Yeah, I think that, and thank you. I think that if those of you that are interested, and if you're on the fence, your phone is on the fence there about homelessness, I ask that if you want to take the time, and this be a moment of learning in your life, go out to the Kailua District Park and look there. Hidden behind, you'll spot a blue tarp, first of all. with a hole in it and look, and there's a human being there. Not a homeless person, but there's a human being sitting there by this electrical box. Huge green box. And we all talk about radiation from electric wirings and what have you. What if there's a short or something, and this human being now, not a homeless woman, we know her by the name of Evelyn Canella, and she sits there smoking a cigarette, can't go to the restroom, going and can't walk. They gave her a walker, but it's a grassy area, so she can't make it. And I know what some of you are saying. Well, that's her fault. Well, it's okay. You will be sent in heaven when you make it up there. You'll be in the that's her fault section, and we'll know where to find you when you get there. That's her fault section. That's close to hell, I think. But anyway, for those of you that don't think it's her fault and think it's our fault for allowing government to take money, and then while we can't afford Evelyn money or care, the dudes running the place get nice salaries. And they get to do all these nice things. So at a minimum, we should be asking the question, is there an imbalance here? The amount of money being paid to the people supposedly caring and administering these programs are getting great benefits, insurance, vacation, overtime, or whatever it is, or a handsome salary. But on the other hand, the intended parties for this are sitting in the park with a broken hip or recovering from surgery. How do you get to the doctor? How do you, is there any system that know that a hospital, it's the bottom line, they're in the business of making money, it's their right to kick you out if you can't afford it, but how is it that a person can fall through the cracks where there's no net? No matter what, there should be a human being standing there saying, okay, we know it's not the responsibility of the hospital, but we have millions that we throw out, and this is where I go back to the Sam Mokus at the community development and the Ernie Martins and the Mufi Hannemans. While they're talking love and aloha and the breath of ha, and I say ha ha, if you fall for these dudes, just look around you. They have a hand in the administration of the monies, and they have a hand in oversight. What's the best statement when people like Hanneman hire their girlfriends to the heart and give them a handsome salary, yet Evelyn Canella sits out there with feces on her and can't make it to the bathroom and then be prodded by the policeman or whomever to run her out? I'm sorry, this isn't the cry, cry, cry show, but I hope that you understand that there's something more. It's a statement about us all. All of us. If all we can do is take a gander at this matter and look casually, peripherally, and say, you screwed up in life. When the reality is, no, we're the one that's screwing up, because that's a human being. And in this system, with the economics and all of the capitalistic behavior that we're displaying now, each and every single one of you was subject to it. If you think I'm lying, just stand and look at some of the stories, if you dare take the time. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Hello? They were carrying on a discussion, I guess. And anyway, this is, and I'm not pleading with you. I'm just saying, here's an opportunity for you to see something that's an undercurrent that is occurring. And the human beings, we're not caring for them. We're dehumanizing them. And that process of hiring one son is just absolutely will stick in my craw. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Mr. Cox. The situation with the homeless, the people themselves, psychologically, they're traumatized and disillusion, and even if you would provide housing and board for them, room and board, you would still need counseling for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, when someone is in that kind of situation who's homeless, you have to use your own intelligence and self-awareness and conscience to guide yourself somehow. I mean, I don't think the government is that evil that they wouldn't provide some kind of assistance to someone who goes to the right agencies. I think there should be somehow field workers that go out into the homeless community and talk to these individuals, see what kind of needs they need. I think the government is benevolent enough that they would provide care for them if asked. I think the police are the ones who are out there that should start this arrangement of helping these homeless people by directing them to proper services.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a lot of people are on food stamps and welfare. Why not help the homeless? I mean, for the well-being of our community. Stephen R. Covey says that your community is your conscience. You make the community to be what it is, and you make it as safe as it is for yourself as for your neighbors, whether they're living in homes or on the streets or mm-hmm. in the parks.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got to say.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. And the callers that called early, I don't know why when you call in, it disappeared, but feel free to call back. Regarding the Hannemans and all of these, that I can only sit here and think that when you look at the Martins, the Hannemans, the Mokus, and they're successful now, and their Sparrows, they are successful. But if my history serves me well and my reading abilities and my ears don't fail me, I suspect each and every one of them were the prodigy or offsprings of people that worked as immigrants or migrants, worked in the plantations. So they didn't start off with these fancy titles. They didn't. The Asperos didn't start off with the ability, when they arrived at the shores here, with the ability of handing their sons a job. So they started off because collectively, people worked together, cared about one another. That's how they lifted themselves out of the plantation. There was no single individual playing games. Apparently, it got out of hand. And we see it in the politics. We see that the politicians. You take the Thielens, for example. I've witnessed her go in, Cynthia Thielen, go in and advocate for a son on hemp, getting hemp. But, you know, and then she has a special interest in the wave action and have muscled her way, as I mentioned, way back on these things. And then there's her daughter who thinks that she, by being given the job of the Department of Land and Natural Resources chairman, she's now entitled to, but she has a train wreck behind her. If you look at her record, why is it that we're not speaking up on this? Good morning, caller. You have to come in a question.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Carol.
Aloha.
Aloha, this is Filippo.
All right. I couldn't tell your voice.
How are you, brother?
I'm fine, brother.
One of the reasons I called is that you come in here real weak again, basically. Pocock this morning was the same thing, so I was wondering if it was the station or my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it's both, huh?
I don't know, Filippo.
I wanted to ask you in a future program, near future program, yeah? We get all tied up with what man is doing to man, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
There is a threat right now in the ocean, yeah, that surrounds us, yeah?
Right.
And this threat is in the monk seals. And mankind has taken upon them to protect these. I call them the dogs of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
They are vicious. They eat anything that's on the table.
Kind of like
and
me.
Being that they're a mammal,
mm-hmm.
they're quite intelligent. They're able to locate crabs, lobsters, even fish eggs hidden under rocks, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
These sea life creatures, of course, been around ever since man. But they have hibernated now into the waters of the Hawaiian Islands, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't the first time.
Right.
But it seems to be. I used to be able to go outside and, you know, pick a squid or two every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm lucky, maybe a lobster, yeah?
Right.
In the past 5 years, the waters on the windward side here, basically, are almost empty with
mm-hmm.
those species, yeah?
Okay.
Crabs, lobsters,
right.
squid. Even the Ulua fishermen are wondering what happened to the Ulua.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, these creatures, as I mentioned, they're super intelligent. They turn over rocks. They dig. They do everything to get
mm-hmm.
a meal, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And their only known enemy is the great white. And right now, I understand there's some news about the Kaneohe Marine Base
mm-hmm.
Becoming a sanctuary.
Okay.
For the monk seals.
Mm-hmm.
I would appreciate, I'm sure there are other people, if you had a guest, some kind of expert, there's a lot of people with University of Hawaii that are basically have a lot of knowledge of this, yeah?
Right, right. Well,
maybe somebody, one of them is listening.
I will do that.
And get in touch with you. It can be a future guest.
Yeah, I will do that. I will reach out, and I can say to you personally, I am one of those experts in knowing the history of
mm-hmm.
the monk seal, and I would say
yeah.
that...
we seem to be all centered on what man is doing to each other.
Well, yeah, not really. I'm more motivated. It's just that along the way to go see the monk seals and the environment, I noticed a lady sitting in the park and being treated and neglected.
Okay, brother. I get a hard time to hear you.
Okay, but
I don't want to tie up your line.
Okay, well, okay, but I will do that then, and we'll put something together.
Yeah.
Okay, aloha.
If I think of anyone, I'll let you know.
Okay. All righty.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
all right,
brother.
Bye.
Take care. God bless.
Well, I'm going to run off the side street for a moment here and speak to that. Filippo, if you can hear, call back. But this is, first of all, I don't know if it's grounded in the religious information that man has dominion over animals. Well, I don't know, but if that is the case, maybe that is. We would have no lobster. We would have no fish if we were allowed to go out and kill every single monk seal that exists. And the reason is the historical background on monk seals is that we allowed the fisheries to wipe out the very animals, as you see the taco, and the evidence is there, the lobster fisheries. And in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, and then the poor management by Western Pacific Fisheries Council, and all of that. This is unfortunate. This is what happens in the environmental management as we talk. Monk seals are not the problem. We are the problem. Not what man is doing to man. It is what man is doing to the environment, because he has, quote, dominion over everything. Everything, but he learns so much from those simple creatures. I often marvel at how ignorant we can be, but be intelligent at the same time when we say we need to preserve these trees, these animals, these plants, because we can learn so much, and we can learn medical techniques and learn things that we can extract from these trees and what have you. to help man continue and expand his life and extend his life on this planet. But on the other hand, if we have no use for you, and I will tell you, if we were to get rid of a large percentage of the gill nets that lay in our rivers, lay in our bays, the gill nets now, if we were to just get rid of those and manage them properly, that would take some of the pressure off of the fish. If we would have limits and if we would have a bona fide conservation department that managed rather than respond and run, if we had that, we'd have no problems with the monk seal. If we had boundaries slapped down when this is a federal reserve and when there's a National Marine Fisheries Service wants to encroach on this and they go to battle with one another, and you have the Fish and Wildlife Service saying this is our refuge, and it's, but the National Marine Fisheries Service says no, and the Westpac says no, we want to be able to go there. Historically, folks, you don't know about the story of the 12 monk seals that were shipped out to Houston, Texas, to SeaWorld, that went blind because man failed them. If you want to read that, Google Leaving the Islands by, I wrote that article some 9 years ago or more. Blind monk seals that were shipped. You don't know about the monk seals that were, where they were bringing them in from the wild, attempting to reduce the loss of the population and increase them out there, but the fisheries didn't want to stop. And you don't know about the stories where they were brought in and worked with and electronically ejaculated, pardon me for such a descriptive term. And then you don't know about the stories where they, in the process of stimulating them to get sperm from them, they were electrocuted and died. We got to also acknowledge and admit that when you dump sewage in the ocean, you might be killing off some things like the taco, the shrimp, the fish. We don't know. And when we do these things, and when we have military activities running around, like we were going to talk about the hovercraft on the sandbar, if you have a state agency running out saying there's no damage when they didn't know they were there, only to serve, and when you go back to the real thrust of it, is this. Remember the governor, Neil Abercrombie, the hippie become congressman, school teacher, whatever he is or was. He's the guy who slid in there and lifted all the environmental laws so there's no protection. So if it's about protecting the fish for the fishermen, then I would say it's a date with the devil, because until you manage the people, it's not about managing monk seals. It's about managing people. It's about the contaminants. It's about the mining. It's about the pollution that is allowed to be dumped. It's about the transient and the dumping of trash by the tourist boats and whatever you call them, the cruise ships, and on and on and on. It's about the tests that are occurring with the military submarines and SIRTAS, the noise. That's what it's all about, folks. It's nothing to do. The monk seal was here, and if you think that you have first seat, then that's fine, but you'll have to deal with that later on. But I am going to try and get a quote, an expert for both sides, if there's such a thing. Good morning. You come in a question? Hello?
You know, the GNLR is in a defunct, identity, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't enforce any of the fishing laws in Kaneohe Bay that I see. I see people netting anywhere with nets, you know, taking undersized crabs and fish. They just take what they like, you know. It's just like a slaughter that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The little that is left, you know. So I know these officers that are supposed to be doing their job, you know, Carol, they ought to all be fired, huh?
Yeah.
The DNR.
But now there are some that work. I was just out yesterday in pouring rain, and there's an officer sitting there working. You know, there are some that work. It's the politics on top, the chicken-hearted snakes that find their way in the top and get the jobs. And
you know, that guy out there, he was supposed to be a hard-nosed guy over there on the, what, the south side. Mm-hmm. Didn't he run the harbor?
Right.
All right, he was supposed to be, you know, when I heard, you know, before he became to the position he is in now, you know, I heard him talk, you know, on the fishing shows and stuff, and he seemed like, you know, a pretty straight-up guy. But I don't think he's doing his job. What grade would you give him?
I ran out of grades for him because I'm off and on with this hovercraft. You know, I personally called him to let him know that this was going on, and the final decision was there was no harm. That's what he said. He had his man to look from with binoculars and see no damage. But any man, any blind man, any child would know that if you put something in the water and you cause that much disruption and displacement, the turbidity, it's going to settle down at minimum and possibly smother out.
Yeah, definitely. There's a silt that comes down on top of them guys, unknown what the heck is happening to them.
Yeah.
They can't get away. Like you said, they're dead in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like suffocation.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Like I said, I've been watching the guy, and he's, to me, you know, I thought he was going to be hard-nosed and get all these guys that are illegal. I'm telling you, it's a wanton illegalness going on over here with the fishery in the Kaneohe Bay.
Right.
It's sickening.
Yeah, and I love Filippo and everybody else, but at some point we must stand up and all. You know, take, for example, there's the Hawaii, I can't think of it now, they want to start eating more turtles, or not more, start eating turtles again. And because there's too many. So my question is to stand back and say, how on earth do you, or who did you consult outside of government that said there was too many turtles? What's too many in the human mind?
Right, it's too many, right. Yeah, the Hawaiians, like, even if you, let's get back to the monks here for a second, because the turtles are, they ate them a long time ago, but there must have been some kind of, you know, season where they didn't eat them,
mm-hmm.
or it made them extinct, right?
Right.
All right, so in the same way with the seal, I hear different stories, but, you know, I need a little bit of Hawaiian lore, and I have read some books, but the seal, I haven't heard it mentioned too much, you know what I mean?
Right. And
they were, city, but not the seal. I don't know whether they're, you know, they must have come and go here. You know what I mean? But like you said, all the seals that they ever had wouldn't have got all the things that they're talking about what they do, right? There's just no way that could happen.
Yeah.
They lived in tune with their environment.
Well,
you think so? The seal and the lobsters and everything.
Right.
Else.
Well, yeah. Hold on. Let me see. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Oh, Carol.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to talk to Lieutenant Governor Brian Schatz on another radio station concerning the milky substance that was discharged in Kaneohe
mm-hmm.
Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, ask him how do you feel about the Department of Health, how you would rate them. Oh, they're doing an excellent job and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
He said they just need to get the right type of equipment and whatnot, and they'll be able to, they're very understaffed and all that kind
right.
of stuff.
Right, right.
It's unbelievable. You know, he doesn't really know what the aspect is going on in that department.
He never did, never will. He is out there, you know, if it wasn't, just start when he stand by and allowed Gary Gill to be reappointed. That's the major misstep right there. Gary Gill has no expertise.
Right.
And you know, other than big, beautiful eyes and that with the family name. As I said earlier, it's a family game here. And we put kids in the role of doing brain surgery if we thought it would get our son a job.
Right.
And I'm sorry. You may have a college degree, and in Gary Gill's position, there are no college degrees here.
Right. It's a shame that this is happening, and we've got to do something about it. And I'm glad that you're on top of it, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Aloha.
All right. Bob, you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You said, so who confirmed Gill, this guy? Who puts it besides, you know, Abercrombie has to put it in front of somebody? You know, is this a direct appointment, or there's no scrutiny of this guy, or what is his credentials, or, you know, like you said, it's only his name got him there.
Brother, there's no science about this. This is about the worst behavior, the worst characteristics of human beings being displayed, where cheaters who put on a suit and says, then they call this an honest suit. This suit I'm wearing today is honesty. and I care for people, and I'm the American way, and what have you. And if you look at it, the only thing missing is a gun to your head. They're robbing us, and they're robbing us blind by assigning their children, their family members.
They will put a bullet in our head.
Yeah.
In reality, it's kind of scary, but because I think we got a troll running the state now, like you said, when he exactly said, all environmental laws are, you know, null and void now.
Yeah. And,
where is it then?
Yeah.
Where is this? With King who?
Yeah.
King Third.
Yeah.
Scary, huh?
Hey, well, remember, we have a state legislature, and we have the Senate and the House, and what do they do? Where is the crying and outrage?
Yeah, what, you know, ran a little bit about the election, you know, too, Carol, because, hey, let's get either some new people or just don't vote. I don't know. It just gets such a low voter turnout that they maybe take it. You know, if it gets out and the people take the message that we don't care for these people that are running?
Yeah, I think that the average person should write to the Attorney General of the United States and say, here's my ballot. I'm asking you to initiate because I don't feel free enough to vote anymore, and I'd like to file a complaint of these criminals have taken over. Right. I can't. I would exercise my vote, but then the monkeys have gotten. Well, I'm sorry. I shouldn't compare monkeys to crooks.
Representatives, you know what I mean? Because I've dealt with quite a few of these guys in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but I honestly, I just got my ballot in the mail, and I'm thinking to just simply mail it to Washington and file a complaint and says that I don't believe that it matters how my vote is registered. The crooks are going to do whatever they want to do anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it's a crime. I mean, rather than not voting.
We're paying taxes to have this feasting running a vote. Feasting is even worse, like you said. It's just, you vote, but you already vote for these guys.
Yeah.
This situation or that person.
And remember, they all caucus and they all they put these guys up. Like, oh, this guy's good. And I see the newspaper said they give Mufi Hanneman a nod. Well.
Like today, he's the guy. I go, wait a minute. He's the guy. Like I said, I helped him get voted in. And like, every time I hear anybody say he's the guy, I like wrap their neck loose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some guys, the paper. Yeah, do you see that in the paper today? They're backing him, huh?
Well, remember who's on the editorial staff at the newspaper that also serves on his committee of elections. So that's
there's got to be. When anybody treats somebody nice, you know, they scratch their back, and now it's the time for them to scratch their back.
Yeah, I don't mind guys scratching one another's backs, or girls, guys and gals. I don't mind that. But
scratch belongs, but not there. You know, not this kind of, you know, snookery that's going on with us, man.
Yeah.
And the price at it. But, you know, if we're going to get back to the DNR, which is my main cause, because I live by the ocean, I see this damage going on day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
The DNR guy goes by every day. You see, these guys are out there with net, you know, it's 500 feet wraparound. Nearly ruining it. These guys are supposed to be netting, you know, with nets over there already. It's ridiculous.
Let me just tell you, and for Filippo, he called earlier, I mentioned nets. Well, you know, there was a rule. We're going to control nets, and so they implemented the law, and that each net should be marked with numbers and all.
Confiscation and all that.
I ask anyone that's interested in this topic to go and ask the DLNR how many nets have been registered, and then ask how many nets have been seized or pulled that contain a number or marking to identify. Very, very, very small amounts. And then even if they do have one, there's a little, quote, loophole that they knew about before they passed the law that says that surround. So the guys just go, oh, we're using the surround net. We're not, but the officers, as I've pointed out like 18,000 times on the show, the officers go home at 4:30, and they won't be paid overtime differentials to work all at night. So,
it's a scam, man, a double scam on them. They're paid overtime to enforce something that they can't enforce.
Yeah, it's like the NBA, man. It's about the Nets. It's the Nets, man. That's what it is, you know. But in all sincerity, we go back to talking about the lobster fisheries. You know, the solution was, well, we knew the decline in lobster fisheries, but also in those reports, they would report the number of octopi, or octopus, that were being trapped. in the lobster traps. And you could see those numbers decline rapidly. And so this is what the young monk seals would eat.
They substitute.
Well, no. I mean, this is what they ate, and they eat eels and things of that nature. But if you trigger an imbalance, take out the lobster, Ulua eat lobsters. But
that's sort of the food. Because don't the octopus, don't they eat the baby lobsters that they can catch them and stuff? So if there's no more lobsters, there'd be less octopus.
It's about man's disruption of the ecosystem. It's yeah. that simple. And so
that's what I called. Let me get to that point. The boats that were out there in the first in that ocean part, they would do a monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
When they caught the when they had the traps, right, and they bring them up when they were monitoring the lobsters, mm-hmm. they would bring them up, and they would be counting the lobsters, and the ones with the eggs, the females, this is what I heard, they would, in the beginning, they would kind of throw them back, but all the Ulua would already, they knew the boats were coming, and knew what they were doing, they were waiting for these guys to throw the lobsters into the water. It was like eating Ulua. So then after that, they go, hell, we eat them from the Ulua, we're going to keep them.
Right, we're going to keep the females. Why throw them back? Because the Ulua eating them. Well,
That is a real true fact. And so that was a really big crime because they're taking all females out of the woods with the babies in them. Wait a minute, man. You're robbing the nursery big time.
I sit back sometimes and I chuckle, you know, in the old days they would describe if there was a guy, say the suspect was black. A black male, like didn't bother to go into details. So now it's the suspect is a monk seal. You know, it's like, give my brother a break. I mean, it's like, let's be realistic. You know, there's more thieves out there than the monk seal. But anyway, I know that's probably not what the people want to hear, but I don't care. This is the biggest lie being told. It happened. If you go back to 1990, Google Carol Cox monk seals. And there was the biggest lie being perpetrated in this state was that monk seals are not being impacted by the long line fisheries.
Yeah.
I went to UH and there was Gene Nita and others sitting there making a presentation where they showed pictures of monk seals being clubbed, shot, and the bottom fish, right? And then.
Put the cameras on the boats. When did they put the cameras on them?
Well, yeah, but still, see, the cameras mean nothing if you got an agency that's tugging a war with one another. You got three entities here, the triangle of screw-ups. You got DLNR, you got Westpac, and you got the National Marine Fisheries Service. And then you got the Fish and Wildlife Service who just can't with the Rodney King of environmental world. Can't we just all get along? You know.
Who's the devil?
They all are. And the president, even Barack Obama, is responsible with this one because he appoints these guys, you see. Yeah, and so...
Something that's reasonable, you know what I mean? You're not right in your face. This is something that no one can, you know, like, wait a minute, you look at the situation, you can't solve this problem?
Yeah, they can solve it, but you got to first know that you want to solve it.
Yeah.
See, if you're not wanting to solve it, you just throw more money at it.
That's the way the money that's flowing and everything is going on, you know, why shake the boat.
Yeah, but I was going to finish this little tidbit. In 1991, that was the biggest lie being told, that monk seals weren't being impacted and that the fisheries weren't impacting, the bottom fishing weren't impacting. Well, I took it upon myself to send a camera to French frigate shows, and I told the biologists that work for Fish and Wildlife, get video of the next monk seal because, see, they were going out there quietly and removing the hook, or the monk seal would snag the line from the long line and drown, right? Because it would wrap in the coral, the long line.
Yeah.
So anyway, I sent out a camera, and some of you may remember this, and there was a videotape of the National Marine Fisheries Service wrestling with this monk seal to remove a hook. We put that on the front page of the Honolulu Advertiser, and that was one of the catalysts for being more public about the management of monk seals. And then, remember now, the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Western Pacific Fisheries Council and the DLNR and the Fish and Wildlife Service did not even have the desire to regulate or to monitor the number of birds that were dying on the longline fisheries, for example. until I put that out there. So, you know, if we go on, I stay out of the fray and look, the fishermen are saying, and I think fishermen should, but guys, you need to back off, and those of you that think the monk seal is evil, no. It's man who's reacting, and it's...
And everything else, and just like that, they catch whales even in nets. You know,
yeah.
If they're not monitored right, you know, they are death traps for a lot of things that don't need to be killed, you know, for our, you know, human, you know, consumption of food, you know.
Right.
Ridiculous.
And the game wardens, there's a cadre of them out there will bust you and you get caught with a net. They're doing their job, but then their management is just too stupid to go and tell and explain to the judges what the detriment these nets do and quantify for the judges. But instead, see, when you hire your brother and your cousin and you hire somebody that ran for governor and then going to bring you some votes and it's going to look good to the native Hawaiian community, hey, man, that's good. That's progress. But the reality is you can go out and exterminate every single monk seal. And I'm going to tell you a little secret. You can kiss the bass goodbye. You can kiss everything when it comes to fisheries, because if you're stupid enough to keep dumping your sewage water into the ocean, that water is toxic to the larvae of many fish and crustaceans and what
have
you.
Well, it actually moves up the food chain.
Exactly. Don't tell them that, though, see, because I'm waiting to see men now, as we know, the estrogens and what have you. I just can't. I'm hoping that I stay around long enough to see a man with beard and big breasts because he grew it, because he's eating fish out of the ocean that had estrogen.
And I can't help it. He to his brother, man, I can't help it. I mean, you get too much of the water.
Right.
That's what it's going to take.
Hey, I've had a wonderful life. So, I mean, it's selfishness, but I thank God for the kids coming up in the future.
Because it has reached a critical stage. You know, the numbers of all these, you know, contaminants in whatever we do, no matter where it is. Like I tell people, they tell me, oh, there's no white sand beach, and, you know, we're worried about the plastic bags, you know. I go, wait a minute, pal. If you go down to, like, where river maps are, and you check the profile of the sediment that's coming out, it's just filled with pieces of plastic. It's just like, it's supposed to be, like, a certain color, and then you if you go through it, it's like thousands of pieces of plastic. So we are totally embraced in this, you know, stuff that we've created, you know, and people, if they can't see it, they're blind, and, you know, we do. You know, what can we do about these people that can't see it?
Yeah.
You go on and on about the program, and I love what we're doing.
Right.
But it gets back to the point where, you know, where I got the pitchfork, you know, what's around the Capitol.
Yeah, let me get these other callers. Give them a chance, all right? Thank you for joining. Bye.
Yeah.
Good morning, caller. You have a number?
Yeah, Carol.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I know you got some real... Good first-hand knowledge of Mr. Hanneman there, who was endorsed by the newspaper. When you read it, it's almost like a campaign ad for him.
Oh yeah.
I wanted you to provide a counterpoint to all the things that they said about him, about his wonderful experience, and that he's the most qualified. You know, they speak of his intelligence and so forth.
Well, I'm
what do you have to say in response that can provide a sort of
Well, everything.
Point to all of that.
I didn't read it because I didn't want to be sickened before the show. I have to contain myself, you know, because I'm coming before intelligent people, and I don't want to be nauseatingly stupid. But all I can say to you is that I've told you 1,000 times, and if the newspaper gave him the nod, then you need to not just look at Mufi Hanneman, you need to look at the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because if we give them our trust, are we dumb or what? Because look at the rail. They want a sign. We keep talking about Wayne Yoshioka and Grabowski and what have you. No, Mufi Hanneman is the thug that put all of this in place. Mufi Hanneman is the one who set up HART. It was under his advisory and his administration, right?
Yeah.
And we're out here, oh, he's done so well. What has Mufi Hanneman, name me one thing where he can claim that he was successful at, and when it relates to government, just one. And that's what my thoughts is about the the endorsement by the paper. And then he lost the gubernatorial race. He didn't lose by a small amount. He lost a large amount by votes. And yet he still, I mean, if he wasn't good enough for governor, why on earth does a newspaper think we should send him to D.C.?
Right.
who knows?
But didn't he say that Hart wouldn't cost anything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but we look at his girlfriend they're working for. That in itself is enough. That's enough cause. Look at Bill Brennan, who there. What is he going to do? Every morning you can see him strolling down King Street. Look at all these guys that got jobs. Frank Doyle, I mean, the man worked for Environmental Services. Why did Frank Doyle get a job? Remember, I reported that these guys had the jobs, but yet they were already assigned to some other department. The Nanakuli Neighborhood Board and the City Council passed a resolution to remove the blue pen on the park, the regional park, that Mufi Hanneman dictated to the Neighborhood Board members. To put that pen there to intervene and interfere with PBT landfill so that he could set it up for his friends to open up a landfill if the need came. So I'm aware, so it may be, I may be the only tree that falls in the forest and I'll only hear myself, but that's okay. I would say to the listeners, think twice, you know.
Indeed.
Yeah, but anyway, we're going to talk more, and I didn't get into the hovercraft, but we're going to go and dive that. I'm informed that they've seen rubble out there, coral rubble broken from these vessels.
Oh, no.
But it's okay. We'll get to it, and next week, maybe, and I will try and get someone to talk about Monk's Hills and the other things. But thank you all for joining me.
Thank you, Edgar.
Aloha. Anyway, folks, the Monk Seal is not the problem. The problem is the military. And, just give you an example. I had extensive discussion that I want to talk about. I filed a request regarding the fire at Lu'ulu'ule, asking for the whole day of communication. They sent me about 2 hours or so of that on tape. So I got to go back. So you can't trust government even when you caught them in the dark, in the corner, and throwing the light. So now I got to go back and ask for more documents. But anyway, it's a big lie. The state is quick to say they didn't have a permit. They didn't need a permit. Yeah, because the governor lifted the rules on the environmental laws here. So it doesn't matter. You know, that's the way the game's played here. So I hope that when we meet again, you'll be sharper, wiser, and focusing on the real issues. It's the crooks in government that's giving you the problem, not the Monk's Hill, not the water. It's the crooks in government who turn their back on you and hire their sons and friends and uncles and aunts. So I'll talk to you later. See you next week.
Exciting moments we share when we're all alone.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.